This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Michael Tomczyk, in for Mike Collins. Aptly described as the emperor of all maladies, cancer continues to plague mankind. Odds are that most people listening to this show have been touched by it in some way, through personal experience or the experience of a friend or family member. Simply put, cancer is a disease in which cells divide out of control and, potentially, spread to other parts of the body. But cancer is far from simple. Its diversity and complexity have challenged doctors for generations. This morning, we're going to examine a monumental effort to, quote, end cancer as we know it. That's how the White House describes Vice President Joe Biden's cancer moonshot. With us in studio is counselor to the Vice President, Don Graves, a member of the moonshot team. His background is not in medicine, but in managing a variety of policy issues for the Obama administration. Don, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Michael. Great to be here.
So how did you get involved in this cancer moonshot?
It's a good question. I have been working with the Vice President for a few years now and have worked on a range of issues. I'm his policy director. And when he started this effort to tackle the cancer moonshot, he needed someone who could get up to speed on policy issues fairly quickly. And because of my background in managing large initiatives, he sort of turned to me and said, hey, help, let's put this together. Help me put this together.
And how would you describe what your role on the team is?
Well, like I said, I'm his policy director. So I give him the information he needs on a range of issues. And in this case, on cancer, it's just getting him fully up to speed on everything there is to know about cancer. Obviously, that is a very, very tall order. And as he says all the time, this is the first instance in his life where he hasn't gone into something without knowing at least as much or more than the people that are on his staff. So it's taken a little while for him to get up to speed. But unfortunately, he had to learn about the challenges of dealing with cancer in a very personal way. Not so long ago. So he's been spending a lot of time over the last few years getting up to speed.
And that's, of course, a reference to his son who passed.
That's correct.
Recently. One thing that I'm curious about, because of your background not being in medicine, what do you bring to this effort that perhaps somebody who was more specialized in medicine wouldn't?
Well, there's two things. First off, my previous roles in this administration, running the President's Council on Jobs and Competitiveness and the basically spearheading the effort on the recovery in Detroit, allowed me to better understand how the entire government worked or didn't work, helped to understand where there were barriers, how to get around those barriers, how to get organizations, agencies to work more effectively together. So that's really what I bring. And then the second piece is I am a cancer survivor, like I suspect many of the folks that are listening to the show are. And so I think it's a unique perspective that, yes, I don't know everything about the medicine, but I certainly know what it's like to be a patient, having to navigate the system. And hopefully that has come out in the work that we've done with the Cancer Moonshot.
Do you mind me asking about your cancer experience?
No, not at all.
What did you have and how are you doing now?
First off, I'm doing great. I'm in remission, it was basically multiple myeloma. We caught it early. I went through treatments all last year. Unfortunately, I was diagnosed just about the same time that the president's son, Beau, was taking a turn for the worse. So it was a little bit of a double whammy for the vice president's broader family. But thankfully, my treatments were successful, I've been in remission for a year now.
So, and I guess that also gets to how it seems, as I've been preparing for this show, it seems like everyone has a story. Have you found that as well, even just within the federal government, as you talk to folks about what you're leading, that you end up hearing these personal stories of folks who are affected by cancer?
Absolutely. Whether it's personal experiences, and there have been dozens of people who've come to us or reached out to me and the vice president within the White House and the agencies who've said, I'm fighting cancer right now. I've successfully survived cancer, and now I'm on the road to recovery, but I want to help out. Everywhere we go, people talk about their family members, their spouses, their children, their parents who've been affected by cancer, whether they've survived or unfortunately lost the battle to cancer. So it affects virtually every person in the country, and that's why I think it's we've garnered so much support and interest in this effort.
And back to the first point you said that that's something different that you would bring to the table potentially from someone with the medical background. From your previous experience in working on those really large government initiatives, what have you learned about being able to bring folks together? Maybe it's across agencies, maybe it's across industries.
I guess the biggest issue that folks face is not one of desire. People want to make things better. They want to work on making a difference in people's lives, particularly if you're serving in the government. The challenge for them is if you work at the National Cancer Institute, for example, and you're doing really creative work there, working with the cancer centers across the country, you may not actually have any reason to interact with anyone at the Department of Energy, where they have the national labs with the huge computing power. So I think the thing that I've learned is that I can bring folks together that don't always see the big picture. That's certainly what the vice president is doing, talking with every member of the cabinet who has anything to do with cancer, working with folks across the country and bringing them all together and saying, look, you haven't thought about the things that your agency is doing in a way that may actually make a huge difference for the work that someone else is doing at another agency.
Well, and off of that, I mean, this is not one of those political issues where there is disagreement about what reality is.
That's right.
There's no debate that cancer is a serious problem to our country and to the world. But even so, what is it that keeps that makes it so difficult for the different agencies or the different industries to be able to work together?
Part of it is a bit of culture, and you see this throughout medicine, really. But certainly, it has been the case, maybe up until the last 5, 10, 15 years, that there was much greater, I'll call it silofication, siloing of folks in their own field, very focused on a particular cancer. Oncologists didn't necessarily work with geneticists. Geneticists didn't work with immunologists. Immunotherapy wasn't really around. It was sort of this backwater up until maybe 10, 15 years ago. You didn't have biochemists who were brought into it. You didn't have computer technologists. So what we're trying to do is to help to drive this move of greater collaboration, not just across the cancer industry, if you will, but across different fields of study and getting people to work together a little bit better.
In the State of the Union address, President Obama included language about curing cancer. The goals I've read more recently from the task force and the National Cancer Institute are more measured, accelerating the pace of research, advancing prevention and treatment. How would you describe the Moonshot's goals?
I'd say first and foremost, it's an effort to double the rate of progress, to do what would normally take 10 years, to do that in 5 years. And all of that is to say bring a greater sense of urgency to cancer. There are more than 200 cancers that have been identified as of now. And so curing cancer is a little bit of a misnomer. You can cure possibly one cancer or a handful of cancers, but you still have dozens and dozens of other cancers. So the key is trying to get us to a place where there's greater data sharing, greater sharing of knowledge, bringing new treatments and therapies to patients, getting people access to those treatments, getting them in the system so that cancer becomes something that can be treatable Down the road, it would be great if we could give every child, when they go in and get their measles shot, they get vaccinated for a whole range of cancers, like the HPV vaccine. That's what we're trying to do. It's really to bring a greater urgency and get folks to work together that had never worked together before.
And is that part of the idea for using the type of grand language of moonshot to really try to drive the urgency?
That's exactly right. In 1971, when President Nixon declared the war on cancer, which was really an effort to do this very same thing, drive and urgency, he didn't have the tools and the resources, as the vice president says, the army, to be able to engage in that war. We're now at an inflection point where the technology is there, where the science has finally caught up with our ambition. And now if we have that greater sense of urgency and a greater sense or willingness to collaborate, maybe we can make the type of progress that we all hope for.
It's amazing to think it was that long ago that there was this war on cancer, and yet, here we are constantly still struggling against the same issue. I mean, what gives you and the vice president confidence that we do have the appropriate army, to use his word, now compared to back then?
Well, part of it is looking at the amazing breakthroughs that have happened over the last 5 or 10 years. Like I said, immunotherapy was seen as a backwater. In fact, immunotherapy has been around for more than 100 years. Dr. Coley, back in the 1890s, first saw that you could trigger the immune system. Just so your listeners can understand, you can trigger your immune system, and it could actually have a positive effect in dealing with cancers. But once chemotherapy was developed and immunotherapy looked like it was going to be difficult to try and figure out what was going on, folks essentially forgot about it. So chemotherapy has been the major, along with radiation, have been the major tools in the arsenal. Well, now, as a result of the Human Genome Project and the Cancer Genome Atlas, we have the type of information that we never had before. We understand a lot better how the body works, how you can target the immune system to work, how you can use viruses, for instance, to also attack cancer. So there's a lot more at our disposal, and we are making huge progress in making certain types of cancers chronic.
And how do you look at what a decade of progress should resemble? I mean, the incredible advances that have been in this past decade, for example, if you had told someone in 1996 where you would be in 2006 and then 2006 and 2016, that probably would have sounded fairly miraculous.
That's right. Part of the rationale for the language is aspirational. I don't know that you... I don't know if the vice president would quantify what 5 and 10 would look like. I think it's more that to challenge the industry to work faster and harder and allow government to help. That's what our role is to help.
We need to take a short break. Two cancer doctors in Charlotte will join us after. You're listening to Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
More Charlotte Talks in just a moment here on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE. Our support comes from WFAE members and Discovery Place Family of Museums, Discovery Place Science, Discovery Place Nature, and Discovery Place Kids, created to inspire curiosity and activate imaginations for 70 years. More at discoveryplace.org. Coming up tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, it's the local news roundup. Charlotte and North Carolina continue to drop presidential candidates. Donald Trump was in Charlotte this week. Hillary Clinton, Michelle Obama, and Bill Clinton are also touring the state. A new poll has Governor McCrory closing the gap with challenger Roy Cooper, and the Keith Scott shooting continues to reverberate at City Hall and CMPD. Our roundtable of reporters is talking about these stories and more when Charlotte Talks tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
on the next Diane Rehm Show. Donald Trump's campaign and questions about fundraising are presenting challenges for other Republican candidates across the country. What this could mean for the GOP's get-out-the-vote operations and for key races in Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, North Carolina, and elsewhere.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
This is Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Michael Tomczyk, in for Mike Collins. We're learning more about the vice president's cancer moonshot this morning. Its goals include making a decade's worth of advances in cancer prevention, diagnosis, and treatment in only 5 years. We've been talking to Don Graves, who is on the moonshot team. We're also joined now by two cancer doctors from Carolina's healthcare system. Dr. Derek Raghavan is president of the Levine Cancer Institute. Dr. Raghavan, welcome back to the show.
Morning.
And Dr. Jonathan Gerber is Associate Director of Medical Operations at the Levine, as well as Director of the Leukemia Division and its Department of Hematologic Oncology and Blood Disorders. Welcome to you too, Dr. Gerber.
Thank you.
I'd like to get both of your first impressions of this effort. So let's go back to when you first heard there would be a cancer moonshot. Dr. Raghavan, what were your initial thoughts?
You know, my initial thoughts were, I have to say, a little negative. You know, there are many political footballs that get kicked about 10 yards and then stop. But I have to say, having watched it now for a while, I'm impressed at what Don has been able to move forward with the vice president's support. It's quite clear that Joe Biden is very committed to this. I heard him speak at the annual meeting of the American Society of Clinical Oncology, and he spoke with passion and conviction. And that's mostly what most politicians do, but then also with a lot of knowledge. And so Don's comments about him getting himself up to speed very quickly, I think is very accurate. What's a little sad, and this is absolutely no criticism because it's just the way life is it took a death in the family of someone that was a hero and that mattered deeply both to the vice president and to the nation. It took that to get engagement of the White House at such a high level. And so I think as a community, we often ignore problems not by intent, but by omission. I think they've done a great job in moving this together.
And Dr. Gerber, to again start from when you first heard about it, what were your initial thoughts?
Sure, I think excitement, but with some caution. I think to echo Dr. Raghavan's comments that we've obviously been through this once before with the war on cancer, and while that pioneered a sense of great urgency and development for the time, we didn't bear as many fruits as we would have liked to have seen. I think that certainly an exciting time. It's a difficult operation. I'd liken it to herding cats, so I respect what you guys are doing. I think it's difficult to get a group of scientists, even more so than physicians probably, to coordinate lots of different efforts. And it's a delicate balance between trying to foster creativity but also have a uniform, coordinated effort towards actually accomplishing these goals.
And Don, who all are you looking to bring together towards these goals?
It's a combination. Part of it is the internal effort, and that's what the Cancer Moonshot Task Force is all about. It's agencies from not just the National Cancer Institute and the FDA and HHS. It's also agencies like, I said, Department of Energy, NASA, the Department of Commerce, and their Patent Office. So it's bringing a wide range of agencies that don't often work together. In addition to that, it's also targeting the science. We brought together a blue ribbon panel that provided 10 very specific, concrete scientific recommendations for government. And in addition to that, we're working with the cancer centers across the country. We're working together with patient advocacy organizations. We're working together with data companies, with drug companies, and most importantly, very focused on what we can do for patients who live in communities across the country, because this has to be patient-centric.
I've read that there may even be some role for Uber or Lyft in this.
That is exactly right. We've had, amazingly enough, 70 specific action steps that the private sector has taken, including Uber and Lyft, to help us drive the cancer moonshot. Just for instance, IBM Watson. IBM has its supercomputer Watson that we're able to now use to help drive our understanding of the data that we have. There's petabytes of data, but it's really difficult to go through that data unless you have the type of supercomputing power that IBM Watson or the national labs have.
And to move back to the two of you, now that you have had more time to learn about the overall effort, Dr. Raghavan, you mentioned already some of how your thoughts have changed, but where you are today, what are your thoughts for the goals of this moonshot and how realistic they are?
The goals, I think, are laudable. They're good goals. I think even Don would agree that there's nothing very new there. It's a question of bringing old ideas together. I think the most important thing is gathering a broader constituency. You know, I think a very useful book to read when you're doing this stuff was written by General Stanley McChrystal called Team of Teams. And as Don was talking, I was thinking that, the whole idea of bringing teams together and de-siloing things is tremendously important. That said, there are some really simple strategies that I haven't heard emphasized by the moonshots approach. A national disgrace at the moment relates to the pharmaceutical industry and the provision of generic drugs and the occasional lack of availability of life-saving drugs for patients with cancer and other things. That's been on both sides of the House's political agenda for 10 years, and they've really done nothing much about it. I think that, if we could make every American get the cancer survival of a college-educated white male, we would do everything that the Moonshots program wants to do at the big picture. And right now, today, this minute, there are patients who simply can't get into appropriate health care because they don't have enough money. They're geographically isolated. The Lynx and the Lyft and Uber ideas are terrific ideas, but they still require transportation of people away from home to major centers. And if I can pat our group on the back for a moment, we've done the antithesis of that. We've spread our comprehensive style cancer center to 24 different sites, many of them in very isolated parts of North and South Carolina. So we don't have to worry about transporting the patients because we've taken cancer care and cancer trials to them. So I think there are some very, very simple strategies that people aren't really thinking about. This election year has just been ghastly. It's been so acrimonious. And this could be, when somebody gets elected, a perfect focus for unifying both sides of the House to say, let's get together, make it not a political football, but make it a joint target where both parties and the minor parties can take pleasure in working together as a team of teams. Let's not politicize it. Let's make it happen. And I think in recognition of Joe Biden's approach to this, he has been ecumenical. He is a national figure who kind of epitomizes the suffering of a family with loss. So that would be a great rallying point to say, let's actually get it done.
We've done some reporting as a station on drug shortages, generic and also ones that affect cancer patients. Is that still as large a problem now as it was a couple years ago?
Still a big problem. Physicians, particularly in the pediatric domain, pediatric oncology, but also in the adult domain, have to sometimes either delay treatment or change treatment because the drugs aren't available. I mean, John may want to comment on that because it's been a particular issue in the world of leukemia.
Yeah, we routinely will need to adjust our regimens for a drug that either goes on shortage or disappears entirely. Some drugs are still made in oral form but not in IV form, and so when a patient is suffering from severe nausea and the like, it actually becomes a challenge getting some of these things in. So it definitely does affect us still on a fairly routine basis.
Don, is that piece of cancer treatment part of this moonshot, not just the research and the advances, but how do we just make sure there's widespread availability of what we already know does work?
Absolutely. One of the things that we are so excited about, and this is more on the research side for now, but it deals directly with the issue that they're talking about related to drug access. It's the National Cancer Institute's drug formulary. I liken it to a jukebox. Everyone knows that when you go to a jukebox and you put your quarter in, it plays a song, and you don't have to deal with the licensing or the rights associated with that song. That's already been taken care of. That's not the case in the pharmaceutical world. One drug company won't allow its drug to be used in combination with a different drug. There's just not this sharing. There's not this ability to have the rights so to speak. So the drug formulary is going to expedite researchers' access to these drugs so that they can actually use the drugs in combination. We can get to better treatments, more effective treatments, more quickly.
Dr. Graber, I saw you nodding some there. Is that the kind of thing that could make a difference?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there are a few key points that Don made. I think number one, being able to combine in the ways that we want to combine across companies, getting better perhaps, but still quite a challenging task in terms of clinical trials. Other issues I think that we're regularly faced with include the fact that the prohibitive expense of some of these medications, particularly oral chemotherapies that patients need to stay on as maintenance. And I don't think that the generic issues are even going to solve these. And in fact, sometimes we're actually better off with company assistance programs than we are with a competitively priced generic that is cheaper but only marginally cheaper. The other problems that we routinely see in addition to the shortages that we talked about before are the fact that the endpoints for some of the clinical trials are not the same endpoints that we need as physicians. And so what may require FDA approval for a trial and what a company will set as their goal may not be the realistic goal for a patient. We see this in leukemia patients as therapies that will bridge them to a bone marrow transplant are successful with the intent that the bone marrow transplant be the cure for them. The therapy is simply a means to get there. That really isn't routinely a goal for developing treatments. That treatments are looked at as their own survival benefit or their own curative potential. And so we probably need to be creative about what we set as our endpoints as well.
And Dr. Raghavan?
Yeah, I was just going to say the other side of the coin that I just think is so important is there really is only so much money available for all this stuff. You know, we still have in the United States a very bad infant mortality rate that we should be ashamed of. And the reality, and I think neither side of the house is particularly happy to say it, the reality is we don't have enough money as a nation to afford the care that our politicians would like to claim is available. That's just a reality of life. So one of the things I'd love to see in the Moonshots program is starting to tackle in a very careful and thoughtful and ethically sound way the thought that not everything works. Not everybody is entitled to every treatment that's available. You know, we have as physicians data that shows certain drugs just don't work. But because of malpractice litigation and because of community pressure, physicians every day are forced into the situation of treating people with drugs that they know will not be helpful, rather than potentially getting patients involved in cancer trials or, very importantly, figuring out the appropriate ethically sound way of bringing in hospice and palliative medicine. We waste an awful lot of money as a nation, and I haven't heard that as being a major part of the moonshots, and I sort of understand it because it's politically tough for any party to say we're going to look at what we spend money on. That'll upset people. But the reality is there is only so much money, and we need to start to use our resources carefully and bring the whole concept of value in healthcare. Giving a patient a drug that you know is unlikely to work but likely to make them sick and will have copays and cost them money, which won't prolong their life, makes no sense when you can actually use hospice or palliative care. At our center, we've got a very substantial commitment to that. We take a lot of time to educate our patients about realistic expectations and interface our palliative management and supportive care teams with active treatment so the patients don't feel that somehow they're being shortchanged when we run out of good options.
Don, on the funding side of this, how much is the Moonshot aimed to better distribute available funds versus increase the funds available or some combination of both?
So let me tackle that in order. I'll just remind your listeners that the beginning of the administration, there was this thing called the American Recovery Act, which was over $800 billion, nearly $1 trillion in funding to stimulate the economy. The vice president was tasked with implementing that. By every judge of that effort, it was a roaring success. Less than 0.2% of waste, fraud, and abuse. The former chair of the House Government Oversight Committee, not a friend of this administration, said it was one of the best run programs he's ever seen. So the vice president brings that same approach to looking at the way that the current funding is being used across agencies and is really driving, to Dr. Raghavan's point, driving change in the way that funding is being used to incentivize best practices, to support strategies that that will get the most out of our limited resources, because we do have, I think everyone would, in an ideal world, wishes that we had enough money that we could just throw money over and over at dealing with these challenges. But the vice president's really focused on making sure that agencies aren't wasting money, that the funding is actually going to those efforts that are working to support new innovative approaches that that in the past may not have gotten the light of the light of day because well, people are in their entrenched ways of doing things. It's a culture change. Secondly, the president's budget, and the vice president has been working very closely with folks on the Hill to get an additional $1 billion of funding for this cancer moonshot effort. I think more money would be useful. It sounds to me like the Senate Majority Leader and the Speaker are both very hopeful that we're going to get to a place after the election where we'll actually get that funding. That's not going to, as I said, it's not going to be all the money that's necessary, but it is going to be very significant and could be a game changer for a lot of the work that we're doing.
And Dr. Gerber, maybe you're a good starting point for this. How much of a difference does the funding aspect of it make when, for example, you're doing research on different kinds of blood cancers?
It's absolutely critical. This is unfortunately not a cheap proposition doing research, so often the patient samples that we look at are our niches isolating these leukemia stem cells at the root of the disease, and to get down to there is typically $1,000 per sample at a minimum. That's just to get the cells before we do anything with them. As we go to try to decode the DNA or do further pursuits, the dollars continue to add up, often in talking about thousands of dollar increments. And so these become very, very expensive propositions, but very, very worthwhile. I think there's ultimately no way past that in terms of doing some of this brute force work to decode the cancer cells, compare them to their normal counterparts, and begin to find the targets we need to hit. So absolutely critical.
And Dr. Raghavan, your perspective on how big of a piece the funding is a driver of the progress.
So, you know, I think the funding is a huge determinant. You know, I congratulate Don on a very gracious and very elegant pivot. What I was saying was we've got to also think about where we don't want to spend money, and he very elegantly talked about the fact that Mr. Biden is effectively getting more money available. I think if we keep throwing money at the problem without reducing expenditure that's not helpful, that's a problem.
We'll keep this conversation going, get to some of your comments, and hear more about how our guests would define success after a short break. You're listening to Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Charlotte Talks continues in just a moment on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE. Our support comes from WFAE members and Carolina Pottery Festival, featuring over 100 potters from the Carolinas and other regions, November 5th, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the LeGrand Center, Shelby, North Carolina. Information at carolinapotteryfestival.org. Coming up next at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show, Donald Trump's campaign and questions about fundraising are presenting challenges for other Republican candidates across the country. Guest host Susan Page and a panel of guests will talk about what this could mean for the GOP's get-out-the-vote operations and key races in Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, North Carolina, and elsewhere. The Diane Rehm Show coming up in 20 minutes at 10 here on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
More than 2 years after ISIS captured a major Iraqi city, Iraqi forces are preparing to take it back. The city is Mosul in Iraq's north.
It's your community. we help you understand it.
The city council approved a series of measures in response to community anger and frustration after the shooting of Keith Lamont Scott.
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
This is Charlotte Talks on WFAE. I'm Michael Tomczyk. We're discussing an ambitious effort to, quote, end cancer as we know it. Don Graves is on the Vice President's Cancer Moonshot team. Dr. Derek Ragavan is President of the Levine Cancer Institute. And Dr. Jonathan Gerber is Director of the Levine's Leukemia Division. We'd also love to hear your comments. Email charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook and Twitter. If you have questions, please feel free to share those as well. Dr. Ragavan, let's start with what research is already being done that fits into the moonshot here in Charlotte or will be affected by the moonshot?
So I think in Charlotte, and Charlotte is just an example, so this is happening nationally. There's lots of exciting work being done. I think one of our most exciting programs is that we're one of four centers participating in the American Society of Clinical Oncology's first national trial. It's called the TAPER trial, and this is led by my colleague Ed Kim, who was formerly the head of the Cancer Research Committee of that society. And we are one of four centers that are looking at genes in cancers and then using those genes and their mutations to predict whether new targeted therapies will work. Thus far, it hasn't been open all that long. That four centers have been involved, 100 patients have been recruited. As it happens, 75 of the 100 have been recruited by my team. And what I think is actually exciting is half of those patients have been recruited at our small centers. So out in rural areas and underserved areas, they are getting cancer center type work available to them. That's where I think we need to be going. John, working in his lab here in Charlotte, is doing some of the most exciting work in developing a predictive test for the outcome of leukemia care. We have new drug studies in, as it happens, myeloma. We're involved in three international myeloma research consortia, and we are one of the biggest contributors to each of those. So what I think is really important, and it's helped by the moonshots, but happened before moonshots began, is to get new players into the circle. And the vice president has done that at corporate level and so on. They haven't done that so much at the clinical level. And so at our center, John came from Johns Hopkins, I came from the Cleveland Clinic. We've recruited about 80 to 100 physicians from major cancer centers to this area, and now we're setting up new initiatives that actually take us away from the Taj Mahal Ivory Tower centers and are actually getting patients into trials. And the big deal there, at a national level, 5% of patients are getting into cancer trials. Biggest problem is access. So we're overcoming that problem. And, you know, I'd be happy to take some money from the moonshots to make us do it quicker, but we were doing it before moonshots began.
And Dr. Gerber, as far as that patient access, among the research that you're doing, how much are patients already seeing effects?
You know, we're now just finally getting smart enough to be able to figure out who is going to be helped by these intensive therapies where we trap patients in the hospital for a month with pretty severe side effects versus who we may be able to get away with gentler therapies versus who we need to escalate to our nuclear options on. A lot of the research that we do is actually focused on determining who's going to respond well to a therapy, who may respond well to a very gentle therapy, and who may not be helped by anything. And sort of speaking to Dr. Ragavan's comments, who we either need to do something completely new or we just need to be very honest and if we're not going to succeed. I think that we're also getting smarter about how we're going to target these different cancers. And I can certainly speak from the leukemia side in terms of we finally now have some new toys to play with, if you will, in terms of drugs that are certainly more promising and harness the good effects of many of these more toxic therapies. It's also interesting that we're beginning to recognize the benefits of palliative care, in fact, even increasing survival. We have a number of supportive services throughout Levine Cancer Institute that are taking care of the psyche of the patient as well as their physical needs. And Dr. Ragavan can probably speak to some of those better than I can.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a great softball, and thank you. We've got a number of patient support services that really are very beneficial. We have 45 navigators, and Don was talking about the challenges of navigating the new healthcare system. We have 45 navigators who help our new patients and established patients figure out how to negotiate care, how to get through the system, and so on. We've just done a study where we've actually shown that patients who are getting navigation have about a year's extra survival when they have advanced disease. We have a bunch of programs. So our own wonderful Charlotte Symphony, their musicians come and play for our patients. And that does so much to lift their spirits. The opera sends musicians in. You know, we've got so many things that you wouldn't think about. Right now we've got a charitable initiative going with a homeless shelter here. We have patients on chemotherapy who are homeless, and there's a group here called Samaritan House that have been housing our patients while they're getting chemotherapy and radiotherapy. So we've developed a fundraiser for them, I might say, November 4th, send checks to Samaritan House to support this effort. This is really important to get people through one of the most difficult situations. And Don could imagine dealing with myeloma when you didn't have a home. So all of these things change outcomes. All of these things make a difference to patients, and providing psychological support, having issues that relate. When Don finished his treatment, I'll bet he will say that he might have felt vulnerable because suddenly the treatment had stopped. We've got programs that relate to taking those patients, following them, telling them what to expect for the future, supporting them emotionally and psychologically, and very important, supporting their families as well.
Dr. Gruber?
I was just going to add that it's sometimes the little things that make the biggest difference. It's interesting. My wife actually spearheaded an annual toy drive at Levine Cancer Institute for the Christmas season. And it's interesting that the children of their adult patients are often forgotten. So these patients are often the primary breadwinner. They're in the hospital for a month at a pop at least. And they're often their spouse is forced to take off of work just to support them. And so we always remember the children in the Children's Cancer Center, which is critical, and toy drives. But so the children of these patients, these adult patients, are often forgotten. And so it's often an inspiring thing just to see the look on someone's eyes when someone remembers about their family, about the rest of it. Sometimes been that extra push to get them over the hump.
The community has been terrific here. You know, you see I'm wearing my Panthers tie at a time that's not the best in the Panthers season, and I'd say keep pounding. The Panthers come and participate in fundraisers and see the kids with cancer and adults.
Understood. But do those things, as far as making major differences in cancer treatment, though, is where we want to try to keep this more focused. Those things absolutely sound like they are helpful. But is that even in the realm of what you would be looking to do on the moonshot, Don?
Well, it's all part of a broad continuum. You can't have one without the other, because if you are not supporting patients as they go through treatment, or supporting patients getting into trials, understanding how to navigate the system, then you're not going to be able to have a system that's actually working. The treatments aren't going to work. Just as a for instance, Dr. Raglan pointed out that 5% or fewer than 5% of patients around the country are actually in clinical trials. That's a huge problem for our research centers. It's a huge problem for our patients across the country because they don't know how to get into the trials. And the folks that are running the trials, you know, don't necessarily know. We've heard this from everyone we've talked to. They have difficulty finding people a lot of times to be in their trials. So one of the things that we've done is essentially to create a matchmaking program using the president's innovation fellows, folks from Silicon Valley. We've created a mechanism on the White House website. You can go to whitehouse.gov/cancermoonshot. You can learn about cancer trials that are taking place perhaps in your community that are specifically focused on the cancer that you may be going through right now. And so that's the type of thing where you have this collaboration that's dealing with the continuum.
And is that already up and running? Are there already patients being matched through that?
So I don't know if patients have actually gone through it. It just got launched last week when we rolled out our Cancer Moonshot report. So I've not actually checked in with the team to see if any patients have used it, but I believe that it's going to be game-changing for folks to better understand where they can get access to the cancer trials.
Dr. Gerber?
And I think that's been very much our goal as well. So I was just going to speak to a trial that we just opened in the past week on for leukemia. Virtually every single patient that enters our doors that is diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia will be eligible to be at least screened for the trial and ideally enrolled on it. That trial will help us to better delegate therapies, again, sort of what I was speaking to, in terms of determining whether they can get away with gentler therapy versus more toxic therapy. Also in terms of whether they're likely to be cured or not, so sort of predicting that early on rather than waiting years to get an answer on that. I think as we're getting smarter, we're constructing trials to be more forgiving. The ASCO Cancer Research Committee that Dr. Raghavan alluded to, I sit on currently, and one of the goals is to actually increase the eligibility for trials. We've often had very restrictive requirements where basically Olympic athletes are the only eligible contenders for trials. Now we're trying to actually get a real segment of the population and open these trials to virtually everyone.
And how much you've talked about being able to target and figure out who can use these different kinds of therapies. How much is reaching those findings a numbers game? You just have to have a larger pool of patients in your trials to be able to determine really what's going to work best for who?
Absolutely. I think if you have a game changer, you need fewer patients, obviously. But for more modest gains, you actually need hundreds to thousands of patients to see if effects are true. And so, you know, one of the problems we've had is collaborations across the country. And sometimes when we do establish those, the treatment is outdated by the time the collaborative group forms and launches the trial. So that's going to be a challenge or a continued challenge going forward, but we're definitely getting better at that.
Dr. Raghavan?
You know, John made a very important point, and that is that so often the patients that get into trials are superstar fit patients who happen to have cancer before they get into the trials. You know, one of the things that I think is really important working at what we call a safety net organization, we see both people with insurance and people with absolutely no insurance and people on Medicaid and so on. We're treating real patients and we make trials available to them. One of the problems in the USA is a lot of the major centers only take patients with insurance. So, for example, until recently, I don't know if it's changed, the Mayo Clinic, which is a fantastically good place, didn't take patients with Medicare. So they were selecting a subset of patients, and their results were not universally available. One of the good things that I think the Moonshot program is trying to do is broaden access to trials so that everybody, all God's children, are getting access to these studies. That hasn't always been the way, and policy has often been influenced by the sort of the policy wonks have looked at data from centers that very carefully select their patients and set them as the targets when they're unrealistic for elderly people and unfit people with other illnesses.
And Don, in addition to the matchmaking program that you've described, what are the other ways the Moonshot is trying to just get more patients into these kinds of trials?
Well, the biggest challenge that folks have is just access. I love what Levine is doing here in Charlotte and the broader Charlotte region. You don't see that all the time with major cancer centers. The vice president says this a lot. He and his son were very, very fortunate because he's the vice president, and his son was the attorney general of Delaware, and they had access to the best care in the world. So they had a cancer trial of one, a clinical trial of one for Bo. Most people, particularly if you don't live in one of the areas where there's a major cancer center, it's very difficult for you to know what's out there. Your oncologist, the lion's share of patients go to community oncologists who are not affiliated with a major cancer center. The oncological community won't necessarily know what's being tried at a major cancer center. So part of what we're trying to do, and you know, again, kudos to what's being done here at Levine Cancer Center, is help spread the word about what's actually out there and help the oncological community better know what's actually available for a specific patient with a specific type of cancer. It's also improving our current programs to expand access and increase access, the programs that the federal government is implementing, and helping people better understand where they can go. It's, you know, the navigators are hugely important because, when I was diagnosed with cancer, you forget everything that your doctor says after they make that first statement. And, you know, it's really important information on what you should be doing. With navigators, with folks who can help you understand where you have to go next, what you can do, it can make it could be life or death for that particular patient.
It's not only helping patients learn more about what's available, it's helping the doctors as well learn more about what studies are available. But I'm going to ask each of you this question, and I'll start with Dr. Gerber. 10 years from now, looking back at it, how would you measure whether the moonshot was successful?
I think there should be some very obvious goals that we should be able to identify. One should be that more patients are cured, and certainly folks are living longer. And I think that we need to have far less toxic therapies. And I think if that's the case, if we're seeing more success, more effective therapies, and less toxicity, it'll be very, very obvious.
And are we already starting to find some of these less toxic advances?
We're definitely well on our way. I can say for the first time, I think, in many decades now, that's visible. It's still a little bit out of reach for most people, but it's getting there.
And Dr. Raghavan, same question?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'd add, you know, being able to measure improved patient satisfaction and improved value. You know, I had dinner a few nights ago with a woman of 103 years of age who was the widow of a patient I looked after 25 years ago. She and I have remained friends through her grieving period and subsequently. That's a good outcome.
And Don, in about 30 seconds, what would you boil down to? What would be success?
Huge new scientific breakthroughs. Data has been unleashed that folks actually can share their data if you're a patient and or if you're a cancer center, that we are bringing new therapies directly to patients. And finally, that prevention and early diagnosis take center stage where they've not been previously.
Don Graves is Deputy Assistant to President Obama and a member of the Cancer Moonshot team. Dr. Derek Raghavan and Drs. Jonathan Gerber are both with Carolina's Healthcare System. Thank you all so much for the hour.